But there has been an agenda, hasn't there, of trying to undermine the customary title system that you started out talking about because of pressure from the World Bank. I mean, there have been various attempts to get land mobilisation bills through Parliament. What's happened there, and what have been people's responses to that?
That is very serious. The World Bank sees the customary sector as an inhibitor of what it calls development. In fact, what it calls development is undevelopment. The World Bank is famous for its Orwellian newspeak that it no longer talks of structural adjustment. You now hear of poverty alleviation. So wherever you see the words poverty alleviation, you should substitute structural adjustment, which is a neocon agenda. That is still being pushed, but they can't break through into, you know, the hold that the community has over the land, because in essence, Papua New Guinean landowners are very much like Texan landowners. You try to steal their land, they kill you. They are very, very uptight about land ownership from a customary perspective. There has been a number of attempts over the past 10 years to register customary land. Now, with the majority of people being functionally illiterate, the registration of customary land, we know historically, will lead to people being driven off the land. And it's an agenda by which corporations will get control of land. So that is being resisted, and it's being resisted at two levels. First, by the NGOs, non-government organizations, who sort of think through the problem. But there's also an intuitive resistance out in the community areas, where people just know, keep the government away from your land and keep corporations away from your land. Now, while you can say that those processes have been very clear and they have been running, there's also another process. There is a gradual move to modernize land tenure, but it's a very slow process. Some customary groups are beginning to register their land. But it's only a very small amount of land is being registered, and it's being done in a very sort of what I would call thoughtful way. In other words, the idea of that you shouldn't register land, I think one has to be careful not to look at that in a sort of religious way. The pragmatics of it are that some people do want to register their land, and there are a couple of existing mechanisms for doing that, which, providing that people are not pushed, I think they can do in a sensible manner. But the great danger is that the government is going to rush the process, and that will cause a lot of social disruption.
One of the areas I know that you've done a lot of work in is the question of forestry, and you did mention talking about sort of the Australia's setting up of or bringing in investors about the Japanese logging companies coming into Papua New Guinea. And I know that Papua New Guinea has a very extensive forest cover. What's at stake in forestry, both in terms of the environment but also in terms of communities there?
Yeah. There's two things at stake. The first is Papua New Guinea's incredibly rich biodiversity. And linked with the forest is this incredibly diverse social setting of small tribal groups with different languages and different cultures. So it's not just a biodiversity or environmental problem. It's also a social and cultural problem. That being said, I think that one has to think very seriously about the role of Australia and its own logging industry. Australia is a bad logging country. I mean, it virtually has no trees, and those trees that it does have tend to be very valuable, quite rare, and have been indiscriminately logged because Australian governments do exactly the same thing as the Papua New Guinea government does, but it does it on a larger scale. They lock themselves in with local loggers. And the Australians, for example, in Tasmania, both parties, both the Liberal Party and the ALP, are locked in with guns. That's the name of the company that that wood chips in old growth temperate forests in Australia, and they export wood chips to Japan. Would you believe? I mean, wood chipping is the most uneconomic way of using a forest resource. So, I mean, the Australians are extremely bad at with logging policy. And what they do with that policy is they export it to the Pacific. So after the Japanese were invited in came the Malaysians. Now, the Japanese weren't so bad, but the Malaysians are absolutely terrible in terms of forest management skills. And in terms of penetration into the Papua New Guinea body politic, I mean, what they do is they, in essence, they bribe, and they have destabilized the country through systematic corruption of senior politicians.
So what's actually happening? I mean, in terms of kind of the extent to which or the rate at which Papua New Guinea's forests are being logged, I mean, how can you give some kind of sense of what's going on there? How fast things are moving?
Yep, things have been slowed down largely as a result of the NGO resistance over the past 10 years. I would say that about 20% of the available lowland forests have been accessed, and there's about another 20% of the lowland forests that are due for logging, but that's being held up by community and NGO resistance. Now, what the other thing you've got to remember is that a lot of Papua New Guinea is mountainous and therefore very difficult to log, or it's swamp and impossible to log. I think that we're probably entering into the phase where if things were left uncontrolled, we would clean up the last 50% of the remaining lowland accessible commercial tropical forests. So it's quite a crucial period of time.